It's time for America's most unique motorsports show, Mostly Motorsports with Scott Traylor, brought to you by Lucas Oil Products. It works.
Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to Mostly Motorsports. I'm Scott Traylor, live from the RBN studio here in Kansas City, Missouri. Welcome to the show. We've got a good one lined up for you today. Man, you know, I say that every day, right? But every day we've got great guests on Mostly Motorsports, and today is no exception. We're going to have Racing Boys' own Lee Spencer. She's going to talk about what's going on out at L.A., the Coliseum. We'll talk a little bit about cup racing, some dirt track racing as well. As you know, Lee Spencer is well-rounded in all fields of motorsports. She's really up to date on dirt track racing and cup racing as well. So it's going to be a good one. Also, a guy that I just met last night, talked to him on the phone. He is the CRA director coordinator out there on the West Coast. Tony Jones is going to join us here in a little bit. His dad is a Hall of Famer, National Sprint Car Hall of Fame member. Old Bud, we'll be talking about him and his dad and what's going on with CRA out in the West Coast. You know, they just got done. Damian Gardner had a hell of a run out there at Coca-Cola Speedway. We'll talk about that weekend. I know that talking to Tony last night, he was very pleased with the track conditions and the way that they brought him in and hosted them to run that race out there at Coca-Cola Speedway. And let me tell you, folks, Coca-Cola Speedway is one of those facilities. It's one of those really nice places. You know, we used to travel with the Lucas Oil ASCS National Sprint Car Tour, and we used to go out there. I think we went out there, gosh, I don't know how many times, 4 or 5 times maybe we went out there and did a race. And, man, it was always a great time. We had great friends out there, great following with the Lucas Oil ASCS National Sprint Car Tour. So we'll talk to Tony Jones about what happened there as well. So let's get right into it. Let's bring on our own Lee Spencer. She joins us now on the show. Hey, Lee, how you doing?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing great. You sound a little chippy today. You sound like you're excited. What's going on in your life today? Anything? Anything special?
No, right before you called, I had a kitchen disaster, so I mean, you're my little respite from having to clean this mess I made.
Well, you know, this is,
I mean, honestly,
this is Mostly Motorsports.
You ever have coffee go down the wrong pipe?
Oh, no, you did not swallow some coffee and went down the wrong pipe and then you spit it up, right?
Oh, I sprayed it all over my kitchen. It's quite the look right now.
Now, let me ask you, Reed wasn't in line with that. You didn't get any on him because, you know, I've seen some commercials before.
No, yeah? But my jacket was, so I was like doing the, you know, rush to get it clean because I went to get a little bump of caffeine for coming on your show. And
right.
I just sprayed the kitchen and my coat, so it was like, it's just one of those, you know,
now, was that
things that happened.
Was that coffee that you bought at the store or was that coffee you made at home?
Oh no, I get my own beans. I grind my own beans, and I make my own coffee. I'm pretty fastidious about that. One of the reasons I love going to Hawaii is because I can get fresh Kona coffee right off of the trees, and there's nothing better than that, in my opinion. I mean, some people might like different, different blends and different roasts, but
right.
I'm a huge Kona coffee fan, so. When I'm there and when I can afford it, I stock up.
I'm not much the coffee person. I tried a cup of coffee. I think it was 1984, and I was snowed in Mason City, Iowa, and we were at this crappy-ass truck stop, and I took a drink of it. It was the worst-tasting coffee I ever had in my life, right? I never had any before then, and I said, I'll never drink it again, and I have not had a cup of coffee since.
One of my best friends, after her mother passed, we took her to Hawaii for a retreat just so she could get some fresh air and,
right,
you know, kind of clear her head and
nice,
you know, just have a good time. And she had never had coffee before. And, you know, she was 50 years old. And it was like, you have to try Kona coffee, because when you get it fresh off the trees, and this is not a knock against, you know, Folgers or Maxwell House,
right,
stuff,
right,
your mother made when, you know, in her percolator when you were growing up. But, it, you know, it's night and day when you put something through a French press or when you do a pour over, and you know, yeah, the hot water hits the beans just right. And, you know, you have this warm, chewy deliciousness in the cup. I mean, it's, it's like wine, right? I mean, you go, right, get two buck chuck, you can, you know, you can go and get, you know, something a little better than that. And, yeah, it's just, you know, it's just a matter of your palate.
You know, Reed is quite the musician, right? I want to know what Reed's listening to right now. What music is he listening to at this moment?
He is actually working on a project with a former bandmate of his and a guy from, a guitarist from Lynyrd Skynyrd. Wow. Those guys are recording somewhere in Georgia, and they keep sending Reed, you know, bits and pieces of tracks that he can listen to, but they're working, you know, it's kind of funny because he's working remote with them and he's working on his third CD, but that's what he's been working on. And I haven't heard a lot of it.
It wouldn't be Ed. It wouldn't be Ed Young, would it?
I will find out.
All right. Okay.
But a really, really good friend of his. And I want to say he played with the Hampton Grease Band. But I'm for whatever reason, I'm drawing a blank right now. I wasn't prepared to talk music, although I should.
Yeah. You should be prepared to talk about anything, right? Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, why not? Right.
Right. Right. That's what we do here on Mostly Motorsports.
Yeah. Mostly Motorsports and a little bit of everything else.
Right.
Like spitting coffee, but,
right. Hey,
you know, just my, yeah.
I mean, I got to let you know that.
Hey, and I just had.
Go ahead. Yeah. Go ahead. Finish up.
No, I was just, I just, the highlight of my day was getting my Fitbit back and running at the same time that I'm at here on the East Coast. Cause, you know, that's one of those little things of, right, frustration that hits you during the day. But anyway,
I was going to.
Go ahead.
No. I keep running, stepping on you. Go ahead. Finish up.
No, I was, you know, you asked Reed about, you asked me about Reed's music, and his birthday present came early this year because, oh, I found a baby grand piano on Facebook Marketplace for $100. And so we had
$100.
Oh yeah, and we $100. I put a picture of it up on Facebook.
Oh my gosh.
And so it's absolutely a stunning, and the movers, I got to give them a lot of credit because, and of course it cost three times what I paid for it to have it moved, but that's all right because, right, they treated it with kid gloves, and it did not, when the piano was delivered, it was still in tune. And so, wow, you know, that, I mean, that's kind of like the bonus plan, and they delivered, right, it on a snowy day, and I'm sitting there and just had my fingers crossed as they were bringing it into the house.
I can't tell you how many pianos I moved in my day in the moving business. I don't know if people know that about me.
Oh,
but,
man.
But my family, my extended family, who I call my stepbrothers, Vernon Pittman's sons, they mean everything to me. I moved furniture until I was about 35 years old, right before I started radio.
My goodness.
And that's why my body's all jacked up, right? I mean, I'm just beat up as you...
So it's not from the racing.
It's, well, the concussions might have did a little mental damage, but you know, as far as the fingers, the knees, the shoulders, the feet, all that, it's beat up from moving that furniture all those years. Hey, guess what? Kirk and I are going to do Tuesday night.
Uh oh, I'm intrigued.
We are going to go see.
Enlighten me.
We're going to go see Marcus King.
Oh.
Now tell
how
me,
how fabulous is that?
Now you've seen him several times, right? You've told me this, right? You've seen him a few times.
I've seen him once. I mean, it's, you know, that I can remember, and that was at Christmas Jam in Asheville. Bob Weir was the headline, at least in my eyes.
Yeah.
But he played one of the opening sets, and he was phenomenal. You are really going to, you're really going to dig it. It's, he does a great job, and, you guys will, can't believe you got Kirk to go. I mean, and on a weeknight, man.
Kirk has never heard one song of Marcus King, but he told me.
He's in for a treat.
He told me that, you know what, I like your music, and if you tell me he's good, then I believe you, and he's going to go with me. Sight unseen. Never heard a song.
But wow.
I think the kid is fantastic myself. I think he's very talented and such a songwriter. I mean, he's really good.
Kirk's really in for a treat, but that's kind of you to take him along. I think he's really going to dig this.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. All right. Hey, did you get a chance to watch last night at Bubba Raceway Park, Tim McCreedy pick up that win last night? Did you watch that?
I did not. I started seeing people tweet about it, and, they didn't tweet about it until the very end. So I will.
Right.
I can tell you I absolutely missed it, which is really unfortunate because I heard it was a barn burner.
Oh, my gosh. Devin Moran looked like he had made the move to make the pass with a lap and a half to go. And Tim McCreedy, he went up to the high side down in turn one, and Moran did a slide job, slid up in front of him, and McCreedy tried to do a cutback but wasn't able to pull it off, and he stayed at the bottom when they got down into three and four. And Moran took the high side, and when he did, he kind of got a little too sideways, a little too far up in the muck, and he came down the track and drilled McCreedy right in the door as they were coming down to the start-finish line. Moran spins out. McCreedy goes on to win the race. It was unbelievable, man, the finish last night. It was one of the best finishes I've seen in a late model race in a long time.
Well, I'm excited because, this is the time of year when things start kicking off down in Florida, and there's going to be plenty between Volusia and Bubba. There's going to be a lot of racing over the next few weeks.
Yeah, no doubt about it. So do you know the answer to this question, Lee, if I ask you this question? The track at the Coliseum, is it pointed north or south or east or west? Do you know that, the answer to that?
I don't. I believe it's north-south. I do know that I was watching the Fox show yesterday, and they could see the Hollywood sign from where they were sitting in the booth, booth was at one of the goal ends, and so I am not sure if that's north south, but we can look it up.
The reason I ask you this question, I've got a audio recording from 1963, Holmes Road Speedway. It was out here off of Holmes Road, about 130 something, and the announcers during that race, and I think it's fitting for the race at the Coliseum. They would call one end the north end and the one end the south end. As they go down into the north end turn, and then as they go down into the south end turn. Well, the way I look at that track at the Coliseum is it's one turn at each end of the track, so it's going to be the north end or the south end or the east end or the west end in my eyes. Does that make any sense to you?
No, it makes perfect sense to me, but I mean, by the time we get there and they unload the 36 cars, I think what we're going to, the traditional turn calling, turn one, turn two, but then again, it's only a quarter mile. And so, it might be a situation where it's, they don't have time to say north, south, east, west.
Right. I get it.
I'm looking at it right now, and it looks like it is east-west.
East-west. All right. So we'll call it the east turn and the west turn.
That's it's east-west. The it is the west side is on the west end is on Vermont Avenue, and the east side faces the 110.
Yeah. Lee, How are they going to manage the point system? This is a non-point race, is that right?
This is a non-point race, just like the Busch Clash. It's an event, and they're going to break it up. They're going to qualify it with heats. The top four are going to transfer. There are 38 cars, and I think 13 get knocked out, if I'm correct. And then there's going to be, what, four heat races on Saturday, and then two LCQs. And so, you know, it should be quite interesting.
You know, to me, I just wish they'd do it all in one day, right? Run your heats, run your last chance qualifiers, run the race, get it over with, and let's move down the road. What do you think?
Well, I think this way they're spreading it out. And, you know, if they do have a sellout on Sunday, then people that, you know, want to get a taste of NASCAR but might not be able to see may not have tickets for both days, at least they'll get to go to one or the other. So I think that, you know, from that standpoint, it's, it's going to be interesting. And, you know, this is also a situation where this is the first look that the fans are going to have at the next gen car.
Right.
So I can understand them wanting to spread it out, right? Because it's going to give them, you know, the practice and the heats, that's going to give them ample time to just kind of shake things down and figure it out.
Mm-hmm. How many teams will go out there to run that race? Will all the teams go out there, you believe?
I was told 36, so I'm trying to, that is, you know, right now, I believe that is what the entry list is. I'm trying to pull up what the press conference schedule is, and let's see, weekend schedules. I know the haulers unload on Friday, and then they're going to do a driver track walk on Saturday. They'll have a practice with groups 1, 2, and 3, three time sessions per group. And then they're going to do qualifying at 5:30 p.m. And then the heats will be on Sunday. Four heat races, 25 laps each. And then the LCQs are 50 laps, and there'll be two of those. But if you win, the top four finishers in the heat races automatically advance. And so the, let's see, that's 16. I'm trying to do the math. You'll have 10, you know, the top five out of each of the LCQs will transfer as well.
Right, right. You know, I've been doing a lot of reading about NASCAR here lately, and Brad Keselowski's got a new sponsor. What is it, Violet Defense, to serve as primary sponsor or something, I think, for his car. Do you think that Brad Keselowski is going to have a hard time over there with his new team attracting sponsors because they haven't had a good track record the last few years? You think it's going to be a little tough for them in the beginning?
Potentially, but I think that with his background, and what he brings to the table, they might have a bit of a resurgence. The other thing, and this is what I think we talked about a little bit on the weekend show, is that when you have a sports property such as Fenway Sports Group, right?
Right.
They own the Penguins or the Flyers, in addition to the Boston's, I'm drawing a blank, the Red Sox, right?
Red Sox, yep.
So when you have, you know, when you have that kind of background, it gives the opportunity for you to sell multiple partners on your sports entities. And so yeah, when they look at it from the standpoint of, okay, here's what we have for the Red Sox, here's what we have for hockey, here's what we have for racing. And then you can package, you know, kind of bundle these deals. And then that way, the sponsors get more bang for their buck because they get more coverage, right? They're hitting different demographics, because you're, you know, Boston Red Sox fan might not be the same as your NASCAR Cup fan.
Right.
You know, you just kind of, you know, look at it from that standpoint. I mean, you know, a lot of people, they love stick and ball. They, you know, but racing might not be their thing. And so, you know, somebody might like baseball, but who's not a huge hockey fan. And so it does, you hit a lot of different potential customers funneling a sponsorship like that. And
right.
So I think that with help from, you know, Fenway Group, that it'll be an easy overall sell as opposed to just selling the race team itself.
Yeah. What does Fenway actually take money out of their pocket and invest in the team itself, or do they just bring the marketing side of things to the organization, the new RFK Racing?
I'm sorry. One more time.
Well,
somebody showed up at the door.
That's okay.
Go ahead.
The RFK, the Fenway portion of that, do they bring financial do they bring revenue to the team, or are they more of a marketing partner for the team?
Well, I mean, I think it's a combination of both, because, you know, at one point, you know, they bought into the team, and so you know, the money that they invested in that, I'm sure it's an ongoing deal. From what I've been told, Brad Keselowski, when he signed on, he was given 13% of ownership. So my guess is it did not come from the Fenway Group. But I think that, you know, it's, I don't have to tell you, with racing, you can't just put some money into the kitty. It's kind of like, once you start putting money in, it's an ongoing deal. And so that's, you know, that would kind of be, if I had to guess, that would be my, you know, my deal is that, or would be my assumption is that they, you know, it's an ongoing investment.
Yeah.
But I mean, I'm sure some of that is offset by sponsorship. I would demand, you know, you would think, eventually most of it would be offset by sponsorship, because usually teams of that caliber, you know, investors of that caliber don't invest with their own money.
Right. Helio Castroneves is talking about running the Daytona 500. He was on Danielle Trotter and Jeff Burton show the other day. What do you think the real chances of that happening are?
I would love to see that happen, and I was listening to, I tuned in specifically to listen to that, and also because I'm co-hosting the show on Thursday.
Oh, good.
So I wanted to see, you know, what some of the hot topics were for the week. And certainly somebody like Elio, and I have to tell you, back in the day, and I don't know if you ever attended the Charlotte Motor Speedway media tours that they would have in January, where we would go to all the race shops at the beginning of the year. But one of my, you know, most coveted trips was always going to Team Penske, because not only did you get to talk to the NASCAR contingent, you got to talk to Elio and whoever else was in town. And you know, that was always a treat. And, you know, if they were going sports car racing that year, those drivers would be there. You know, Roger always made sure that we had just whatever driver we needed. I mean, they were very successful. And I can remember probably 10 years ago asking Elio that. And, you know, he kind of gave me this smile like, you know, I would love to, but the boss man over there won't let me, you know,
right.
That kind of look.
Right.
And Roger just, he's pretty strong in his thoughts of not letting his drivers cross series. You know, with the exception of, you know, sports car racing, because it's got a roof, but,
right.
I think that the, you know, running a Daytona 500, is a situation where he thought, you know, maybe for somebody who didn't draft all the time and didn't, you know, that was not really
right.
Their milieu, was not, you know, it was almost a risk putting him into that kind of a situation. So I, you know, and it's, I'm trying to think of when, other than AJ Allmendinger and Juan Pablo, have you seen, you know, Roger offer up IndyCar rides too? And
yeah.
I just always thought Elio was just so talented and charismatic. And you think about, NASCAR's always kind of looked for you know, the a guy outside of the norm. And when I say that, you know, they're always trying to be more inclusive. And you think about the following that Elio has, you know, coming from Brazil and bringing that fan base, and then the fans that he attracted while he was on Dancing with the Stars, and, you know, throwing him, I mean, Tony and Ray were so smart to throw him out into SRX, you know, and give him an opportunity to run stock cars there. And I think that that kind of wet his whistle to think, hey, you know, maybe I would like to try this out. I will say one of the most shocking things of the year, if, you know, you want to put down on the list of things that kind of really knocked me back, was the fact that Ray Evernham is no longer involved in SRX. And when he told me that at the NMPA Hall of Fame two weekends ago, you could have knocked me over with a feather, because he was so involved in getting that series right. off the ground this right. first year, you know, and we went to two of the races, and it was phenomenal. And we know it's entertainment, you know, it was made for TV racing, which, mm-hmm. you know, NASCAR has gotten more into that direction, I think, of late. And, you know, I just think that's the direction, you know, motorsports is going in, because everybody's competing for that entertainment dollar. But I think for what they tried to put together and the amount of time that they did a phenomenal job with it. And, you know, back to Elio, he was in the mix, and it was fun to watch. And, right. You know, I hope that he does get the opportunity to do that, because I think just his fan base alone, you know, in the different eyeballs you could put on him running the Great American Race or anything else in NASCAR would be of a benefit to stock car racing.
Yeah, you know, if they could get a few of those IndyCar drivers to come over there and drive these stock cars, I think, you know, we look at what Kyle Larson has done. He's dragging the dirt fans back over to NASCAR a little bit, because they want to watch him and Christopher, all the open wheel guys, come over there and run, right? I think it'd be smart for NASCAR to try to, even if they got to reach in their own pocket and bring some of those guys over from IndyCar, I think a little transition from the fan base from over there, bringing them over to us, I think that would be a good thing, don't you?
Oh, I think, you know, it's a win-win. Anytime these guys go someplace else, and it only helps motorsports as a whole. And I know for a fact that there have been ongoing conversations between World of Outlaws and NASCAR, because they want to know how they can maximize things. And I can tell you one way how they can maximize things, and that's not having the season finale for World of Outlaws the same weekend as season finale for NASCAR. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, if they're going to do it, I haven't seen the schedule yet, but, having it at Concord last year, when all the NASCAR people are out of town covering the season finale for NASCAR, I don't think that's a good thing for World of Outlaws, because I can guarantee you I would have been there had they been, you know, racing the week before. I mean, I would have right. found a way to, you know, go back and forth from Martinsville and you know, make it to Concord at night, because it's so worth the while, and I enjoy World of Outlaws so yeah. much. But you know, I do know that they work together, and there's some cross pollination. You know, there have been some guys who have tried their hands at NASCAR, and you know, it might not be something that happens all the time, but you know, some of the dirt tracks, it would be really cool to see these guys on a reoccurring basis, and just let them just not get a taste of it, but be able to race enough that they kind of, you know, get a feel for the bigger, heavier cars and right. slinging those around, because, you know, they know the tracks and they, you know how the dirt's going to react. And just putting it all together would be a win-win for both sides of the table.
Do you think some of the IndyCar drivers are worried about coming over there and trying to do the stock car deal because they're afraid they're going to be embarrassed? You look at Sam Hornish and some of the guys that have tried it over there. They haven't had a lot of success with the stock cars. Do you feel that they might be a little intimidated by the stock cars?
Well, if you look at Steve Kinser, and yep. nobody was better in World of Outlaws right. than Steve Kinser, right?
Yep.
And we just inducted him in the NMPA Hall of Fame when I don't know what took so long because, I mean, you know, he is the GOAT. And he, I'll never forget being at Daytona and seeing him come walking down the garage, you know, just, you know, walking from his hauler to the race truck. And, you know, everybody just stared because he had, you know, such a massive upper body, you know, from wheeling cars as long as he did. And, you know, he was built. I mean, just built. And, I mean, you know, it wasn't just the women turning. The men were turning, too, because, I mean, I can remember, you know, Brett Bodine just, you know, all of a sudden he saw Kinser come walking through the garage. And I think he was up on top of his transport at the time, you know, watching practice. And here comes Kinser. You know, you just heads were turning. I mean, there's no better way to put it. Now, he didn't have the greatest equipment, which was unfortunate. But if, you know, this newer equipment is the great equalizer as it's being advertised. And, you know, drivers like Corey LaJoie, who was on with Danielle earlier today, is reporting, then perhaps we'll have the opportunity to see people not have that fear coming over. You know, if you were listening to the midday show yesterday in its entirety about Jeff Burton, you know, he said, oh, you know, this guy, he wanted me to run the Indy 500 and I didn't want to embarrass myself. Mm. Well, you know, that's the difference between Jeff Burton and Kurt Busch, right? Kurt Busch made sure he had a really good equipment before he went over there. He ran with Andretti and he, you know, he really put on a show. He won rookie honors the year that he raced.
Finished eighth,
you know, put on it.
He finished eighth. I believe he finished eighth, didn't he?
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, top 10 finish in his rookie appearance. First time he had ever been in one of those cars. And, you know, I think if he hadn't had such drama going on in his life, it might have been better. But it's, you know, he came and he delivered. And, you know, it's, I think that the opportunity is there to see more of that, you know, cross-pollination. And there really shouldn't, you know, if they went back to making one of either the 600 or the Indy 500 a Monday show, it would even be better because then you'd probably get more guys doing the double. And I remember when John Andretti did it and Billy Hagan was his team owner. And Billy Hagan was just pacing and pacing and pacing in the media center, the infield media center, because, you know, he kept waiting to hear that John is, you know, back and ready to get in the car. But, you know, you have those moments and those stories, they write themselves and it's so phenomenal. For the fans, for the sport, you know, for everybody involved, because it just, you know, it just makes for great storylines. And, you know, I'd love to see more cats do it. I mean, I know Larson, you know, desperately wants to do it. I'm sure his relationship's good enough with Chip that if, you know, he dove back in, you know, they could probably work something out, although I'm sure Chevrolet would want to see him in a Chevrolet. But, you know, there's definitely the opportunity is there.
You think because he was in Kenny Bernstein's equipment, right? And it wasn't all that good, as you mentioned. Do you think you think he would have done better if he would have Steve Kinser would have done better if he would have got into a quality ride? Do you think that he would have had a chance?
Oh, absolutely. You know, you think about the guys at the time. You know, a Hendrick, a Robert Yates, a Roush Fenway. Right. You know, any number, Richard Childress, you know, any number, if he had gotten into one of those mega teams at the time, it would have been so much better. I mean, you think about Blaney coming over. Blaney came over, Bill Davis Racing, they were okay team at the time. They, you know, they had their flashes of brilliance, but it wasn't phenomenal. You know, Blaney did okay, but he didn't light the world on fire. And it's not that he couldn't drive. It's just, if you're not with one of these, you know, top organizations, it's almost stacked against you, right? The deck's almost stacked against you before you even get started. And, you know, like I said, if per chance this next-gen car becomes the great equalizer, I think that just, you know, opens the door for me, more people to get involved. But my gosh, you know, going back to Elio, how cool would that be? Man. I mean, it would just, it would be phenomenal.
Yeah, no doubt about it.
Talent and popularity.
Yeah.
Is
there one World of Outlaw or sprint car driver that you would love to see get a chance? I know Buddy Kofoid. We all want to see what he can do down there, right? So let's take him out of the equation. But some of the other drivers that you've been watching over the last couple years, is there one guy out there that you think, man, if that guy gets a chance, he's going to go a long ways? Is there one person out there you can think of?
You know, for strictly just being selfish.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's not because he's more talented than any of these other guys. I just think he's more polished, and that would be Sunshine.
Yeah.
I still think he has a bit to go in those cars until, you know, he's at Brad Sweet's level. I think it'll come. You know, I think Brad's been there, done that, and he's kind of over it. And, you know, Casey's already left, and he's, you know, going to run Outlaws. But I think someone who is as young as Sunshine, I think he might be somebody that could, you know, make that move. You know, and we were talking a little bit about the girls. I mean, you look at a Kaylee Bryson. I'd love for them to put her in a truck at Knoxville. I mean, just to see what one of these girls could do. I mean, you guys saw Brian Brown there, and, you know, I thought he was decent. I really expected more out of, I'm drawing a blank. He's from upstate New York, and his wife races. Help me out.
Stuart Friesen.
The name's just, yeah, Friesen.
Yeah.
I expect more out of Friesen at Knoxville. And I was, you know, I think it's fair to say I was disappointed, but that, you know, I don't even know how to describe that event, but I'm glad they're going back. But, you know, it's, I think Sunshine, Gravel tried. I think Macedo's another one that, you know, he's really hungry. You could see it. And, you know, if Tanner ever got a fair shake again, I mean, Tanner, you know, try his hand a little bit, but you really have to be with a higher caliber team than what these guys usually get into. I think Gravel had a much better shot running with GMS than the other, you know, than Tanner did. I think he was with Young Motorsport, but GMS is a really good baseline. If you can get it, you know, in a GMS truck, that should really, you know, that you can't blame it on the equipment, let's put it that way.
Yeah, for sure. What do you got coming up on Racing Boys, Lee?
Working on my Denny Hamlin story. Also working on the lineup for Thor Sport. I'm hoping that we get a little news from them this week, trying to figure out just how much Johnny Sauter's going to race. It doesn't sound like it's going to be a full ride, and there should also be the Biffle announcement coming at some point over the next couple of days. I'm selfishly hoping that it's on Thursday, so we have something to talk about on the midday show on Sirius. But still getting a little odds and ends of racing news before the season kicks off.
Is Johnny just a little past his time now, you think?
I don't think he's past his time. I think he's got four kids, and, you know, one's, I think, playing hockey, one's racing, and he commutes from Wisconsin, and I think that he kind of wants to make his own schedule and figure out what he's going to do from there. And so it's going to be interesting to see, you know, what races he decides he's going to run in and what that schedule looks like. But from what I understand, it will be part-time.
Yeah. All right, Lee. Well, I appreciate you taking the time to join us here on the show. We look forward to talking to you every time we get a chance, because you just bring it, and You're the best at what you do, and I've been saying that for years, and we really appreciate you being a part of Racing Boys and everything you've done for us over the years. So thank you so much for being on the show today. I appreciate you.
Oh, thank you, and hopefully we'll talk on Saturday if there's not too much craziness going on at the Coliseum.
We'll talk to you Saturday for sure, all right?
Off to clean out my kitchen.
All right, go clean up that coffee.
See ya.
All right, there you have it. Lee Spencer joining us on the show. We're going to take a break. When we come back, the CRA Race Director Coordinator, Tony Jones, joins us next right here on Mostly Motorsports.
You're listening to Mostly Motorsports with Scott Traylor.
At Lucas Oil, we take pride in creating problem-solving products to make your car care easier. We protect your vehicle and make it run longer so you can focus on the things that matter most. Whether it's commuting to work, visiting a loved one, taking the kids where they need to go, going to the big game, or anywhere life takes you, Lucas Oil is committed to getting you there for all of life's important moments. Lucas Oil, it works.
One of the main reasons for poor vehicle performance is a dirty fuel system. It can cause decreased fuel economy and actually do harm to your engine over time. By adding Lucas Fuel Treatment to your vehicle, it cleans and lubricates the entire fuel system. Pump, carburetors, fuel injectors, and valves as you drive. It also improves your vehicle's performance. It's a non-solvent product designed to protect both gasoline and diesel engines. Lucas Fuel Treatment. It works.
Rod End Supply is involved with a variety of motorsports as well as industrial applications with many different types of products. Since 1989, Rod End Supply has provided superior products priced competitively. Whether you're racing at the circle track or drag strip, rock climbing, or going off-road, Rod End Supply has an assortment of rod ends, radius rods, and specialty products to keep your equipment moving. Rod End Supply's experienced staff is ready and willing to help you with your needs. Their promise is to continue to provide a superior product with superior service so you can stay in front of the field no matter what it is. To learn more, go to rodendsupply.com.
There is less than 1/100th of an inch of motor oil protecting your car's engine. Friction and heat causes engine oil to experience thermal breakdown, weakening its ability to protect the engine and its parts. Lucas Heavy Duty Oil Stabilizer is specially formulated to resist thermal breakdown, protect vital engine parts, and extend the life of your engine. It also stops smoking, knocking, and oil consumption in worn engines. Lucas Heavy Duty Oil Stabilizer. Keep that engine alive. Next to your vehicle's engine, your transmission is the most important component of your car. If it's not properly maintained, your car may not shift properly. By adding Lucas Transmission Fix to your transmission, it cleans and lubricates sticking valves for proper shifting, renews worn bands to stop slipping, stops seal leaks, will not void new car warranties, contains no harmful solvents. Lucas Transmission Fix. It works.
Cigarport.ca is your go-to online store for exclusive cigars produced from the best quality tobacco in the world.
Lake of the Ozarks in the Osage River Valley. Stay and play packages in our first-class condos. A beautiful clubhouse complete with pro shop and exercise facilities. A large pool for relaxation and families. The Eagle View Sports Bar and Grill. Great wedding facilities. Go online and make your tea time today.
As your power steering pump ages, seal leaks may occur, causing the power steering system to lose fluid. Your power steering system may also develop an annoying squeal, and the steering may become more difficult to handle. By using Lucas Power Steering Stop Leak, you will stop the seal leaks, reduce slack in rack and pinion, eliminate the squeals and hard spots in your power steering system. It is guaranteed to stop seal leaks for your money back. Lucas Power Steering Stop Leak. It works.
You're listening to Mostly Motorsports with Scott Traylor.
Welcome back to the show, everybody. Mostly Motorsports is brought to you by Lucas Oil Products, made in America, sold to the world. And boy, I've been looking forward to this next guest. He is the USAC CRA Race Director Coordinator. Tony Jones joins us now on the show. That was easy for me to say. Tony, how you doing?
I'm doing good, man. How are you doing? Man, really good to be on with you.
Man, I am doing great. Let's start off by talking about your event last weekend down there at Cocopal Speedway, Yuma, Arizona. Man, it seemed like it turned out to be a good event, didn't it?
Yeah, a real good event. We had quite a few cars, 27 cars that showed up. And, you know, I know nothing's really going on, you know, during the winter, and
right.
These guys showed up and they put on one heck of a race. And I tell you what, Brad Whitfield and Jerry down there at Cocopal Speedway, they, had the red carpet out for us, showed up, no problems. You know, it's nice to go into a racetrack where you can just mesh, you know, with the promoter and,
right.
And he basically just, hey, you do what you got to do, put on a show and entertain us.
Yeah.
And that's what we did.
Yeah, you yourself as a racer, you can appreciate it when people want to work with you, right?
Absolutely, man. I mean, I've been doing this for a few years, and yeah. It's to a point to where, you know, it's and vice versa. The promoter doesn't want to deal with an organization to come in here, you know, come into his racetrack and start, you know, stomping feet, and you know, this is what we want, and you know, we want green M&Ms, not, you know, I mean, just it's. They don't need all that stuff. So
right.
We come in and we work with these guys, and you know, it works both ways. And with my crew and you know his crew, everybody meshed and things went really well.
Man, it's always nice when it works out that way. It doesn't always work out that way. Before we get too deep into what's going on with USAC CRA and everything that you guys are doing over there, let's give everybody a little bit of background about your career as a driver.
Okay, you want me to do it?
Yep, because you know, I don't know as much as you about you, right? That's all I'm saying.
As a driver, started back in the late 90s when I first started out. Timmy Coffeen, a good friend of my dad, he gave me a BJ chassis, a Bubby Jones chassis that he actually got from my dad. And he was racing himself, and at the time, he was doing Indy cars.
Right.
So he gave me a chassis and a bucket of bolts and said, here you go if you want to go racing. And that's how it all started out. And I came back to California a few times and ran for a guy named Larry Henry. Larry Henry is my boss for the company that I work for right now, Orange County Tank Testing, and a childhood buddy of my dad's. And they've been best friends, you know, all up. Till you know, obviously today or when my dad passed away.
Right.
And I drove for him a few times. Then I got into a Gene Cowherd car. Gene Cowherd was he fielded a car for Jason Leffler and Dean Thompson. Jason had a couple big midget races coming up, so they said, hey, put Tony in that thing. So I raced for him, and I spent about four years with Gene Cowherd. There was Johnny Vermeer and a couple other people that I drove for, you know, in that span of time, you know, off and on for other people that I was blessed enough to get rides. We won our first race at Terre Haute, Indiana, one of my, you know, favorite racetracks and one of my favorite and fondest memories, because I had all my family there and friends and, you know, it was in front of a pretty big, you know, big crowd and good stout at cars. Then I ended my career with a team called the Alexander Brothers. Steve and Mark Alexander filled the car for me and flew out and won a championship and a few races and had a good time. You know, these guys, anybody that gets in their car, it's any monkey can drive their car. I'm telling you, it was a deal to where you just basically get in and drive the thing. They make it easy for you.
Yep.
So we went out and did really well in that thing. You back up to the Gene Cowherd car. I wish I had the knowledge, five, 7 years later, I back up to the Gene Cowherd car because my dad, Bubby, and my brother, Davey, was working on the car. And, man, we could have probably won a lot of races. But I was just, you know, cutting my teeth and kind of getting used to the whole, you know, 410 deal. And that's my... I first started racing 410. You know, it's 410 cubic inch, you know, motors. You know, everybody and their dads and everybody sitting there trying to get these kids into 360s. And, you know, it's good to start out mini sprints, dwarf cars and all that stuff. Right. But, man, when you get into sprint cars, it's probably a 410 motor. These guys are spending, you know, $35,000, $40,000 for these, you know, big old 360s that, you know, they go out and win $1,200 and, you know, yep. create a bunch of bad habits. And they're kind of like a big fish in a small pond.
Yep.
Well, you know, most of these guys, they don't think they can run with Damian Gardner or Brody Roa or Austin Williams or Cody Williams. They don't think they can run with these guys. And they need to try.
Right.
You know, that's how you learn. You learn real quick. You know, that's just like going golfing. You go golfing, you're with a bunch of hacks, you know, getting drunk and hacking this ball and
right.
another ball down. Ah, no big deal. But you go with a bunch of good guys that are pretty serious about it. Well, you're going to step your game up a little bit.
Right.
And that's how this series is that we're trying to, you know, get to where, you know, we got a bunch of competitive guys and guys are coming in and you know, and running with us. And it's getting to be a real fun deal out here. But I ended my career in the Alexander Brothers car. I took a real bad spill my last year. And I retired twice. I retired the first time because there wasn't enough money involved in racing as a driver. I wasn't making, you know, a lot of money. So risking my life, I was, you know, kind of like, I'm kind of over it.
Right.
So we won the last show that I retired on, and then the Alexander Brothers called me back and said, hey, let's just go another year. So I went another year, took a tumble, got hit in the cage, and kind of woke up kind of dazed and confused, and I thought right then, it's probably best if I jump out of these bad boys.
Yeah. How old were you then when that happened?
I was early 40s.
Early 40s.
Early 40s. I definitely had some couple years to go. I just with the family and, you know, kids and just, you know, there's other things to do in life.
Yeah.
Than racing. I did it all my life. Obviously around with my dad and once again my brother and those guys, you know, all their lives. They eat, slept. I mean, that's what we do. It's as Joneses that we eat, sleep, breathe, racing. Sprint car racing, non-wing 410 sprint car racing.
You had to be awful proud of your dad in the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum, right? I mean, and you know, Scott DeLozio and I were talking a little bit last night, and he considered your dad one of the original outlaws, you know, with Jan Opperman, Rick Ferkel. You had to be pretty proud of your dad.
Yeah, you know, he was one of the smartest men that I've ever known. You know, as a kid, you sit there and you know, oh, that's my dad and blah, whatever.
Yeah, right.
You know, you just kind of blow it off. But, man, anything he's ever said to me, it's just like, holy crap, it comes true. I mean, he knows what he's talking about. And, you know, and you know, race car wise, anybody that's ever driven for him or my brother, really? You know, they've won races. I mean, they know their stuff. But my dad was, you know, a phenomenal race car driver. You know, he was smart. He was definitely smart on the long races. He knew what to do with the cars. You know, every crew chief that he's ever had, they worked well together, and they made the changes they needed to make, and they won a lot of races. So it was pretty cool to watch that because that's what I strive for. You know, obviously I don't have, you know, the quarter of talent my dad had.
Yeah.
But man, if I had his talent, I'd won a heck of a lot more races, I'll tell you that.
Right. And didn't your dad sneak a car into the Indianapolis 500? What was it, 77, 78, or somewhere around there? He started 33rd, and he run ninth, didn't he, before his motor blew up?
Correct, yeah. He was up in the top seven before his motor blew up. And and if he would have pursued that and kept going in that, then I think he would have won a lot of races,
mm-hmm.
IndyCar wise. He once again smart. You know, he's real smart on the long runs. He listened to the greats. You know, AJ Foyt, the Andretti's, the Unser's. He watched and listened and learned. You know, that's once again that's all he did.
Right.
And he adapted. I think that's where I get, you know, half of my talent from is adapting in a race car. Just having that talent to adapt in a sprint car is everything because that track changes constantly. If you can't adapt and be a chameleon to find the moisture and to find the spots where you need to run, then you're not going to win a whole bunch of races. But I acquired that from him for sure.
Yeah. Well, listen, I know you've been kind of the race director there for USAC CRA for the last couple of years. Talk about how that's going for you, and is it a little tougher being on the other side of the fence than you thought it might be?
No, it's exactly what I thought it was going to be, because I was one of those guys that spoke my mind. If I seen something kind of out of place or something that didn't make sense, I was one of those guys to voice my opinion. Now I'm the guy on the other side, listening to the other guys voice their opinions. And I laugh because I can't get mad at them because I did the same damn thing.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
But being a race director, the good thing about being a race director coordinator, my boss, my old boss, Chris Kearns, he did a great job. The guy puts on shows, Wild West Shootouts, and the guy is really smart. He taught me a lot of stuff when I was race directing, when he was the race coordinator. And he, you know, we would talk things through and bounce things off each other. So that was a good chemistry between him and I. This year they took him back to Indiana, and now, you know, me kind of doing his job. It's a lot of work. You know, he was the guy that, you know, put the trophies together. He was the guy that put the banquets together. And man, I just want to go racing.
Right.
So I'm learning this stuff real quick. I mean, we just had that 3-day show over at Kokopah. I put the schedule together this year. I put a little bit of a aggressive schedule together this year because, once again, back in my day, you know, we'd run 54 race seasons, and man, we were good. We were damn good. You know, we went across the country, and you know, and we had a shot at these guys. It got to a point on the West Coast, especially the CRA stuff. You know, it got down to where we're running 22, 24 races, mm-hmm. where you got guys in the Midwest, man, they're running 80 shows, 100 shows.
Wow.
So when they come out here, they're sharp, you know, and that's what you need. You need to run. You need laps. Doesn't matter if you're a Damien Gardner or a Austin Gabowski that's just starting out racing. You need laps. If you don't get laps, you will not get good.
Right.
So that's where I'm, that aggressive schedule, I hope it's going to get these guys to, number one, come out and race, generate money. Number two, get good. You know, if you want to be a race car driver, that's obviously that's your goal. That was my goal. I never show up the racetrack going, man, I wonder who I'm going to run second to tonight. No, I showed up going, who's going to run second to me?
Right.
You know, that's what you got to do. You have to have that mentality going to the racetrack. And I think some of these guys have lost that, you know?
Yeah, for sure. I know that you've been really passionate about rewarding your teams for coming over there and staying with you. I know that you did some tire giveaways, some extra money. And I think you mentioned something about a couple thousand dollars for the owner and a couple thousand dollars for the driver and the point fund money. Kind of go over that a little bit with me.
So basically, 2 years ago when I was hired, I basically started hustling money. I started talking to our sponsors, getting people involved. Lance Jennings does all of our sponsorship stuff with certificates, and we have a lot of people that want to come on board with certificates and help the racers out, which is good. Man, it's awesome. But I just wanted to do more. So 2 years ago, I hustled money, got enough money to where I started buying tires. I'd buy those tires with the sponsorship money. Then I'd go into the pit meeting. We'd have a random draw in pit meeting. And whoever the random draw was, you know, because you pill pick to
right.
your qualifying position. So we do a random draw. Whoever's pill we picked, they got that right rear tire or left rear tire, whatever I had that night.
Right.
And, man, those guys were appreciative. I mean, very appreciative. And so every year I try to change it up. Last year, what I did was I hustled that money, got enough money together to where I give $100 to each heat race winner, $100 for hard charger, $100 for hard luck, and $100 for fast time.
Wow.
And so we had all this money, you know, just sitting in my pocket and giving $100 bills out, and these guys were appreciative, and it was a really good deal. So I figured this year, I'm going to change it up a little bit. Our champion from last year got $2,000 to win the point championship. the car owner got $2,000 to win the point championship. Well, to me, we got to build on that. If you don't have a big point fund, guys really aren't interested in going to all the races.
Right.
So therefore, it hurts your car count. And for me to have a car count is pretty much everything. Is everything. So when I show up to the racetrack and after pill draw, my officials tell me that we have 27 cars, I'm ecstatic.
Right.
You know, 24 cars, 22 cars, I'm good.
Full field.
Man, exactly. But when I show up with 15 cars, it's hard to go to that same promoter next year and go, hey, man, I want another race with you.
Right.
Well, you only brought me 15 cars last year. Well, and I know that, but I'm gonna build that. No. I don't want to do that. I don't want to try to work our way into something that where we shouldn't be. So I'm trying to build this series up to where this year, every bit of sponsorship money is going into the point fund. So as of right now, I got $10,000 extra to give to the point fund, which is building day by day. So, you know, like right now, Flow Dynamics, they've been with me for about 5 years now, 4 years now. Billsjerky.com. You like beef jerky?
I love beef jerky.
Tell you what, you will never have better beef jerky than Billsjerky.com. So if you go to Billsjerky.com, you can order as much as you want. I'm telling you right now, you'll be calling me up in the next couple weeks, tell me it's the best beef jerky you ever had. I'm not sure if you ever heard of the Gardner family. The Gardner family has been around for forever, Ascot days. You know, back in the 50s, 60s, they came on board again this year in memory of Jim and Chet Gardner. Basically, what all these people are doing, they're giving $3,000 each to the point championship. And if you're a sponsor of ours, basically what we do is we put a sticker on everybody's race car. You're on our billboards. You're on our banners. You're on our trailers. Everything. We give you as much press and social media. Lance Jennings does a great job at social media. But these three guys are giving $3,000 each so far on the point championship, and I'm looking for more. We have another guy that came on board. His name is Jake Hodges. He owns Laser Works, MFG. Basically, he's building all our winner's trophies this year, and that's a sponsor. So everything that I do as a sponsor. My graphics guy, Factory Wraps, he's been with me for 25 years.
Wow.
And, I mean, he's changed his names a few times, Bar Bangers, VGI Graphics. Now it's Factory Wraps. And these guys do everything for nothing. Everything I have. I mean, any fighting, stickers, boards, banners, they do everything. Just like Laser Works, building all the trophies.
Wow.
These guys do it for nothing. And so we put them on all the cars. We put them on all the trailers, billboards, banners. We try to give back to these guys. But, you know, the more I can do for nothing, it saves the organization a little bit of money. And we can put back into it to give back to the racers.
Yeah. Man, you think about a lot. You know, I think you're a chip off the old block. I think you're just like your old man. I think you're a really smart guy, man. I sense that about you. And the direction you're taking the USAC CRA is in a good spot. I know that you got some races coming up on March 4th and 5th. You're at Tulare on the 4th, and then you're at Hanford on the 5th. Then you take a couple weeks off, and then you go to Paris, one of my favorite tracks. You know, I don't know if you know Jeff Christensen. Do you know Jeff?
I do know Jeff. Him and I, he was RacewayVideo.com.
Right.
And he actually sponsored me when I was actually racing, so I had Raceway Video on my uniform.
How about that? Well, Jeff traveled with me for 7 years with the National Tour, and he is one of my favorite people in the whole world. But he spent a lot of years out there at Paris, though.
Good dude. He's a real good dude, and he does a great job. I mean, really, really great job.
Yeah.
With this schedule that you're talking about, that's you know, we have a banquet coming up. I mean, I know we already ran our first race, but with all the chaos with the Chili Bowl and Wild West Shootout and everything that was going on, we're putting our banquet at February 19th, which we don't have anything going on February 19th. But I tell you what, when the schedule starts, man, we're going. You know, we're going hard. Yeah. And what we're doing this year as well, we're going to a new track called Mojave Valley Raceway. When we go to the new tracks like this, it really helps these guys adapt as well. New tracks, you know, we're not just at one track all the time. You know, we're at different tracks. We're a traveling series, and that's why these guys need the money. That's why these guys need the tow money, the extra little bit just to get them there, you know. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Bakersfield, I just worked a deal out with Bakersfield. They only do one race a year. Now we're doing two races a year. Unfortunately, our Louis Vermille got canceled because Tommy Hunt couldn't find a racetrack to go run at this year, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Next year, we're hopefully going to have it back at Calistoga Speedway. But, yeah, we're trying to work on a little bit different tracks. And on purpose this year, I've let these guys off for Mother's Day, Father's Day, Easter, Valentine's Day. I mean, not that really matters too much to me, you know, but right. It will eventually. But these guys, I give these guys this time off and try to be families are everything. You know what I'm saying? I mean,
yeah,
so you get the Mother's Day off. You go spend time with your mom. Your wife. I mean, your wife obviously is a big deal. She puts up with your crap all the time.
Yeah.
You know? So I give these guys time to do that. And I purposely work the schedule around those dates so they can go spend time with their family.
Yeah. Well, where are we at on the Western World Championships?
Well, that's something we're trying to work out right now. We were doing it at ET Arizona Raceway,
right.
And with Jonah Trossel, and you know, he did a great job, hosted us. It was a good deal. He's looking for another track right now, which is in kind of limbo. Not really sure. I'm not really sure what's going to happen right now. There's a couple talks for a couple different tracks, but man, I'll tell you what, going over to Cocoa Speedway this last weekend.
Great place.
Whew,
that would be a great place for it right there.
Man, it's hard to turn that down. It really would be. I mean, ask all the just the talk in the pits. I mean, everybody talks to me. Everybody wants to either complain or, you know, you don't hear a bunch of good stuff, but they like to complain.
I didn't hear
one complaint over there. Not one.
Yeah,
I mean, everybody was
awesome.
Happy. Everybody was excited. They were pumped up. I mean, heck, I've been talking to Brad Whitfield. Give me another one. Let's do this, man.
Right.
And, you know, and he had fun with it. I mean, he had fun with us. And once again, we all, you know, we all just meshed. And it worked out really good. So talking about the Western, man, I'm really hoping that we can work something out with Brad, you know, and get in there. That'd be a big deal. It really would be.
Yeah. Boy, old Damian Gardner's had a kind of a chokehold on everything going on over there since about 13, hadn't he?
Yeah, you know, Damian Gardner, he's a class act. You know, he's a tick rough around the edges. That's how we like him, right?
Right. Exactly. Yeah.
But his talent is just out of control. I mean, the guy is more talent than anybody that I know. You know, we've had a lot of great racers in our time, but that's definitely one of them right there. Obviously, you look at his stats. You know, I mean, stats, you know, speak for themselves, you know.
Yeah.
So he's a good promoter of the series as well. I mean, that's a big deal. That's a big deal for me. You know, I have to have guys like Damian Gardner so, you know, we can still, you know, sell our series. You know, they want to see Damian Gardner come in, Brody Roa, the Williams boys. I mean, you know, we have a couple guys right now that are coming up. You know, Tommy Malcolm, you know, he's doing really well. You know, we got Chase Johnson runs with us every once in a while, you know, and it's just, that's how you got to sell a series, just like the national deal. You got, you know, Grant and the whole list of names, you know, with Leary and all those guys that run with the national series.
Yep, you know,
you have to have these guys to sell, because if not, these promoters don't want you there. You know, they don't want to see, you know, somebody come in and, you know, who the hell is that guy?
Right.
You know?
Yeah, for sure.
So if I can come in with a Damian and Brody, you know, rivalry type situation going on, I mean, that's going to bring more people in the stands,
right.
You know?
Yep,
now,
sure.
Do I want to see him banging wheels? Not really. I mean, but that's part of sprint car racing.
It is.
You know, I don't want to see anybody take anybody out, you know, but banging wheels, man, that's part of it.
Right.
And these guys, you know, if you can, you know, win races without doing it, that's how it should be.
We're visiting with Tony Jones. He was the 2007 USAC CRA Sprint Car Champion. He's also the race director and coordinator of CRA now. Before we let you go, Tony, is there anything that we haven't covered that you'd like to get in here real quick?
You know what? My biggest thing was to get those sponsors in there for you guys. And once again, if anybody's out there is listening that wants to be involved in, you know, giving back to the racers, the more money I get, the more I give back to the racers. So if you go to my website, or actually go to my email address, TonyJonesRacing@gmail.com. That's TonyJonesRacing@gmail.com. Man, shoot me an email. Let's do this. Put some money in the series, and you know, every bit of money that I get goes back to the racers and helps these guys get to the next race. And obviously, the more money we have, the more interest we get from guys from out of town, guys that have a little bit of talent that want to come in and win a little bit of money.
Right.
So that's really about it. I appreciate you guys having me on here, and man, call me anytime, and hopefully the next time we talk, I'll have another 5-10 sponsors and talk about a $30,000-$40,000 point fund that we got drummed up,
Yep, for sure. You know, I'm sitting here looking at Bill's jerky, and I'm real excited about this hot brisket beef jerky. Have you ever tried it?
Oh yeah, most definitely. That's probably one of the best ones.
Oh man, I love that. I love that spicy stuff, man. I just can't get enough of it. So, Tony, thanks so much for taking the time to join us on the show today. We so appreciate it. We hope that we can talk to you down the road about everything that's going on with CRA out there in the West. We hope that you could be a regular on the show. Would that be okay?
That sounds awesome to me. And like I said, shoot me an email. You got people out there. I know a lot of people listen. So TonyJonesRacing@gmail.com. Shoot me an email. Let's get you on all these cars, all these trailers, all these billboards, all these banners. Let's get your name out there, and it's very appreciative.
Yep. Well, we'll try to send them your way. Tony, thanks again for taking the time. We appreciate it here on Mostly Motorsports. We'll be talking to you down the road.
All right. Thanks for everything you do. I appreciate you guys.
All right, man. There you have it. Tony Jones, he is the USAC CRA Race Director Coordinator. He is the 2007 CRA champion. This guy knows a thing or two about a thing or two. He was raised by a racer that knew a lot about our industry. His dad, a Hall of Famer. He's back in the days, one of the original outlaws that ran with Jan Opperman, Rick Ferkel. He's got a lot of knowledge there, and he's using it to promote USAC CRA out there in the West. What a great job he's doing out there, and we appreciate him taking the time to join us. We also want to thank Lee Spencer for joining us as well on the show. We'll do it all over again tomorrow. We'll let you know who the guests are. Just pay attention to our social media pages, and we'll let you know who it's going to be tomorrow. We don't have them quite lined up yet, but we're working on that. So hopefully you'll tune in tomorrow. And I want to thank all the people. Listen, folks, we had a record day here just recently on the amount of downloads that we've had for this show. And we're thankful that you're listening and you're downloading the show and you're going back and listening to it at a later time. Thanks again for doing that. We so appreciate it. For Austin, for Kirk, I'm Scott Traylor saying thanks for joining us on Mostly Motorsports. It's all been brought to you by Lucas Oil Products. Made in America, sold to the world. Again, I'm Scott Traylor. We'll see you tomorrow at 12 noon Central Time right here on Mostly Motorsports.
Cigarport.ca is your go-to online store for exclusive cigars produced from the best quality tobacco in the world.
One of the main reasons
reasons for poor vehicle performance is a dirty fuel system. It can cause decreased fuel economy and actually do harm to your engine over time. By adding Lucas Fuel Treatment to your vehicle, it cleans and lubricates the entire fuel system, pump, carburetors, fuel injectors, and valves as you drive. It also improves your vehicle's performance. It's a non-solvent product designed to protect both gasoline and diesel engines. Lucas Fuel Treatment. It works.
At Lucas Oil, we take pride in creating problem-solving products to make your car care easier. We protect your vehicle and make it run longer so you can focus on the things that matter most. Whether it's commuting to work, visiting a loved one, taking the kids where they need to go, going to the big game, or anywhere life takes you, Lucas Oil is committed to getting you there for all of life's important moments. Lucas Oil, it works.
Rod End Supply is involved with a variety of motorsports as well as industrial applications with many different types of products. Since 1989, Rod End Supply has provided superior products priced competitively. Whether you're racing at the circle track or drag strip, rock climbing, or going off-road, Rod End Supply has an assortment of rod ends, radius rods, and specialty products to keep your equipment moving. Rod End Supply's experienced staff is ready and willing to help you with your needs. Their promise is to continue to provide a superior product with superior service so you can stay in front of the field no matter what it is. To learn more, go to rodendsupply.com.
There is less than 1/100th of an inch of motor oil protecting your car's engine. Friction and heat causes engine oil to experience thermal breakdown, weakening its ability to protect the engine and its parts. Lucas Heavy Duty Oil Stabilizer is specially formulated to resist thermal breakdown, protect vital engine parts, and extend the life of your engine. It also stops smoking, knocking, and oil consumption in worn engines. Lucas Heavy Duty Oil Stabilizer. Keep that engine alive.
Missouri's must play.
Nine whole courses to choose from at the Lake of the Ozarks in the Osage River Valley. Stay and play packages in our first-class condos. A beautiful clubhouse complete with pro shop and exercise facilities. A large pool for relaxation and families. The Eagle View Sports Bar and Grill. Great wedding facilities. Go online and make your tee time today.
Next to your vehicle's engine, your transmission is the most important component of your car. If it's not properly maintained, your car may not shift properly. By adding Lucas Transmission Fix to your transmission, it cleans and lubricates sticking valves for proper shifting, renews worn bands to stop slipping, stops seal leaks, will not void new car warranties, contains no harmful solvents. Lucas Transmission Fix. It works.